All the ducks are swimming in the water. Balderalderalder, balderalderalder. All the ducks are swimming in the water. Balderalderalder, balderalderalder.
Hi, welcome to this week's Garden Cafe. For those of you joining us for the first time.
Garden Cafe is where the live chattering gardeners meet to discuss the world from a gardening perspective. And of course, the Garden Cafe is where the garden crimes can be confessed, of which there are many. If you are a bit vague on what amounts to garden crimes, we will list them later. Mary.
You can, of course, ring in and confess your garden crimes, and the number is 1850-666-666.
Let us know your current favourite plants by voting for it on our Top 10 Plants page, which you can actually find on our Pinterest page, Garden Cafe Ireland.
Okay, so your Top 10 Plants this week are Carnilla Valentina Glauca Citrina.
Now, is that number one or number 10, Mary?
Well, that's number one.
All right, so you're starting from the top. You go, okay.
Daphne Belua Jacqueline Postil.
Okay.
Salvia Gregii.
Okay, and the top 10 is voted by our listeners, okay? Peter, any thoughts on any of these plants so far?
No, so far we've only done three. There's another
seven. I love the Cornilla.
I'll wait till the list comes out before we get, in its entirety, before we get a
bit
controversial.
Right, number four, Mary.
Verbena bonariensis.
Oh, beautiful. Number five.
Acacia dilbata.
Number six.
And of course, a lovely Ceanothus truitten blue.
Mm. Seven.
Hamamelis mollis pallida.
Hamamelis.
Depends where you're from.
North side. Yeah, wow. Or, well, I'm further north side if that's the case.
It's north side Dublin. Number eight.
Magnolia Leonard Messel.
Number nine.
Acer palmatum sangokaku. Was one Sankaki. They've changed the name.
Oh, and why? Number 10.
And cyclamen coom.
I see. Mm-hmm. Peter, any thoughts on that top 10? Voted by our listeners, of course.
I want to know why they changed the sangokaki name.
Yeah,
and we almost got a line Messi in there for those of the football fans amongst us.
In relation to which plant?
I'm unsure. I don't know. It's a bit like lining up a whole load of cake and saying pick whichever you think is your favourite. And I'm going to say it's all cake.
What I would say is listeners should have a look at the Pinterest page, see what's on our top 10 and vote accordingly. But for me, Cornilla Glauca is absolutely fabulous.
Hamamelis smallest.
That's your number one. What's your number one, Mary?
No question.
Well, it's a toss-up between Carnilla and Daphne Belua, I think.
Very good. Well, look, to keep things moving along in the programme, I want to introduce our presenters in what we like to do to keep things down to a minimum in a five-word description. Peter Donegan, describe yourself in five words for our listeners.
Well, I'll go by my Twitter bio, which says something along the lines of horticulturist, yapper, very award-winning coffee.
Mary Staunton in five words.
Good God. Optimistic, resourceful, personable, relaxed, and coveter of other people's plants, I think.
That's more than five.
That's certainly more than five.
Speak for yourself.
And myself, Eugene Higgins, I'll leave that to Peter, I think, to sum me up in five words.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this for the last 3.5 years, Eugene, and I've narrowed it down to four, and then we're kind of stuck. But I have eccentric, flamboyant, enthusiastic, flowery hair quiff.
That probably sums me up. Okay, well, look, first of all, I want to say hi to our guest presenter, Sheila Shoiga. Sheila, thank you for joining us.
Delighted to be here, but can I admit, I just thought I'd stepped into like a scene in Star Wars. It just sounded like Klingon when you were actually naming all those plants. Not one did I get, Eugene. Not one.
Take the pictures that are on our Pinterest.
Are there basic names for gardening?
Well,
I
have to say I agree with you on that one. But unfortunately, it's about our listeners and they vote for the plants. But see the one at the number 10 there, Cornilla Glauca Valentina. That is my favourite plant. Fragrant yellow.
It looks
flowering.
Really pretty. Lovely yellow little
winter
little,
flowering.
Flowers for about 7 months. Nice. Flowers from October until the following May.
So sounds good for me because I tend to just grow herbs, to be honest.
Good.
And then come the winter months, nothing in the garden.
There you are.
Will I try this guy?
Go for it.
Cornelia. Yeah.
You, Cornelia Valentina, you love
okay,
it.
I'll
so
that
listen,
one
Sheila, welcome. You are a coordinator and interrogator. You are armed with a timer to keep the show in shape because we're quickly out of shape already. But before we do that, I need you to induct you into the Garden Cafe with three questions.
Go on.
Your favourite plant.
Well, it's the only plant I have at the moment indoors. I've had it for about 15 years. I went into a gardening shop and said, look, can you give me something durable that lasts? And he said, how about this one here? It's a jade plant. Then I looked into it. It's a feng shui money tree. Oh. At the moment, it's flourishing. So I've had it about 15 years and it's the only thing that's lasted. Everything else I had has come and go, but it's still with me.
It's your favourite plant.
It's still there. It's brilliant. It's bomb proof.
Your favourite gardening word, Sheila Shoiga?
You and I know what this word is because years ago when you came on my radio show, I was completely new to it. I thought it was a wonderful word. I'd never heard it before. The word is topiary.
The word is topiary. It's a great word.
Can you
word.
Imagine? I know I'm getting the strangest looks, listeners, here, because obviously this is something that most gardeners know of, but for me, topiary was brand new.
I love topiary.
It's a fantastic word. It's a pointless exercise, however, unless you own a cardigan and a Cliff Richard vinyl, but that's for another day.
Very harsh there, Peter. Very harsh.
Well, listen, it's true. It's true.
Okay, and listen, Peter, besides the fact that we should explain to people who don't know what topiary means, before we get to that, Sheila, your garden summed up in 5 words.
Well, I was thinking of various things like wild and windswept, but when I think about it, it's like the song goes, parsley, sage, rosemary and thyme. It's just herbs.
Oh, I love that.
So I have herbs in the summer months, sort of into the spring. Nothing at the moment except mint, rosemary, a little bit of thyme left. The rest is gone.
You can tell us all about it later. Yeah. So what's coming up on the programme this week, Mari?
Okay, we have gardening in space where no one can hear you dig.
We also road test, my apologies, the first Irish rose. I almost said rose test, the first Irish road, which would be an entirely different horticultural matter altogether. We deal with the listeners' gardening questions. And once again, the I made it from the garden section every week with Mari sitting here to my left-hand side. What did you make this week, Mari?
Not that I made it this week, but I have it all the time. It's called fennel and wild orange tea. You ever had it?
Never.
Okay. Will it be better than your dandelion coffee? Because that was appalling.
You didn't like that, no?
No, no. It's absolutely horrible. Well, but if it was World War II and I was stuck, I would have
drank it. This is far better. There's no need to be like that. I noticed that I'm making all the stuff that you're going to be critiquing every week.
Tell us about it later, okay? Because we need to get the show on the road. Okay. We have a garden confession later on, which is kind of interesting. But Sheila, you need to keep us under control and in order. You have a timer bell. Please hit that timer bell and let's get the show on the road. We invite our listeners every week to road test various plants and garden products to get an insight into how they really perform. This week it's a brand new rose that amazingly is the first to have an Irish title. We actually couldn't wait till the rose got out in the market, so we asked the man who bred it to give us his observations on what would be the most likely, a little biased admittedly, but an informative road test.
Yeah, we went out to the beautiful surrounds of North County Dublin to meet Laddie de Jong, and the rose on this occasion that he has grown and bred is called Tá Gamaí, he explains. I am in North County Dublin, not the North County Dublin that would be famed for the homes of most of the U2 band members. On this occasion, however, I am with somebody who in horticultural circles is right up there with the very best of them. Laddie de Jong, how are you?
Not bad, Peter. I'm just feeling grand. I'm after getting me new hip in and me new roses growing well, so everything in the garden is roses.
Rosy indeed. On the subject of roses, you would not believe it if I told you, but this is of official, and you heard it here first, the first rose ever to be named Oscuelga, or in Irish for those of you listening abroad.
Yes, it is the first one. Yeah, I thought it'd be a nice thing to do, and I thought that the diaspora would be very interested in the same rose all over the world, and you know how many Irish people have gone abroad. And it's the loveliest little light pink rose, born just over the foliage in a nice even bush. It flowers 3-4 times a year. It won't need pruning for a number of years unless it's getting in your way, because it's not a tall grower, and you're better to leave it alone. Some of these dwarf growers are better left alone, because if you cut too much at them, they have to reproduce that growth, but if you leave them with the growth they have, they're better off.
On this occasion, this one is called Tá Gamaí, which translates as?
It is good, and it is very good.
How does it scent?
Yeah, very hard to have everything, you see, and that's one thing it hasn't got. Not much. There's a slight bit of scent from it, but it makes up for it in the lovely shape of the flower and the amount of flowers that it bears as well. Anybody that would grow it would be very, very fond of it.
And as all rose growers would know, roses usually come with one main star attraction, and usually it's the flower or it's the scent, or it's disease free, in which case it, generally speaking from my experience, loses out on something a little bit along the way. There's like it creates a bit of an imbalance. How much do these retail at, Laddie, do you mind me asking?
We don't charge any more than the normal price we charge for all our rose bushes, and that's €5 each.
Laddie de Jong, thank you so much for your time. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you very much, Peter.
So I actually thought the first named Irish rose, it might be a tricolour, but it's not, Peter. It's a kind of a pink.
It's a kind of a pink. The buds on the occasion we were there were, you know, it was, I have to say, they were quite petite, they were quite small. lacking in scent, as he noted, but then equally as also noted, that's made up for by its repeat, its ability to repeat flower over and over, which is quite worthwhile.
How would you describe it, Sheila, as someone who speaks Irish? Are you impressed at, or are you saddened that there's a rose now that only has come on the market at the stage with an Irish name?
Oh no, I think it's great. I think any time there's a plant or a flower named in Irish, isn't it a wonderful thing to see? So yeah, I mean, it's beautiful. And Togama, isn't that what he called it?
Togama, yeah.
And you're looking at it here, the image of it, it is beautiful. So I think it's deserving of its Irish title.
Togama means what?
It is good, but you got to bear in mind, Eugene, on the international plant market, when you're across in Holland and they're wheeling out trolleys and they're trying to pronounce Togama, it's a kind of business-wise, it's not the smartest decision in the world. I entirely understand why there has never been one named before. It lacked a fodus on certain places around the nursery, but then I understand that as well, you know.
So limited to maybe the Irish market?
You're limited to a bit of that. I mean, if you'd call it Mrs. Robinson, it would have been a hell of a lot easier. I'll put it to you that way.
Can you write it phonetically?
I think on the occasion we were there, I think the I was missing again in one or two places. What was the actress that was up for was on the Ellen show recently?
Saoirse Ronan.
Yeah. Okay. So there's an element to that, and trying to pronounce Donegan when you're in Scotland is difficult enough. Never mind throwing in a couple of fodders and saying a Donegan. So look, yeah, you got to give them credit where it's due. But I also equally understand the logic behind it. It's the first ever named Irish rose. Yeah,
I think the American market will suit it well. I think for a fiver, that's what impressed me so much. I don't think I've ever bought a rose for a fiver.
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. They used to. They haven't really come up. They're one of them, and we discussed that afterwards. Where the Love of the Rose or the Groff, or if you want to call it that, you know, it seems to be falling away. It's probably down to a lot of maintenance and. Equally, the amounts of insecticides, my apologies, and fungicides that must be used to keep roses looking at all times their best. So it's a difficult one. They are slightly falling out of favour, and therefore price isn't really changing on them.
Guys, 20 seconds left.
Would you buy one, Sheila? Because it's got an Irish
for a fiver,
title.
I think I'd be like Mary. I think it would, yeah.
No, but the fact that it's got an Irish
I don't
name,
think it would bother me if it was Irish or Portuguese or, you know, whatever.
It's beautiful.
It looks nice.
It is beautiful.
I wouldn't mind if it smelled, though.
Well, you see, it's a trade-off. You either get loads of repeat flowering or your scent or disease resistance. That's the trade-off.
Gotcha. Wouldn't out of time, guys.
Fair enough. Let's move along. So, Peter, in the Garden Cafe tradition, can you sum up this rose, Togama, in 5 words, do you think?
I had noted petite, repeat, flower, scentless and Irish.
Very good. I'm going to go out and buy a few and put them out and see how they grow. I'm not a big fan of roses, you know, but hey. Anyway, now we get on to our guest. It's not often that we get to discuss the horticultural world in terms of outer space, though it's a bit more topical at the moment. For those of us who have seen or read The Martian, that's me included, which features a stranded botanist who has to combine his botanic and science skills to survive on Mars. To give us an insight into this and what happens when plants head off to a space station, we asked this week's studio guest, Anthony Hyinga, to come in and tell us all.
Yeah, Anthony is loud born, and he is very well versed in growing plants in space. He has designed plant experiments for the US space shuttle, nonetheless, the Russian space station, Mir unmanned satellites, and the present International Space Station. He is in the process of growing one of the largest ranges of plant species for use in space, and that includes spinach, tomato, wheat, and species used for medicinal purposes like wormwood, periwinkle, and echinacea. His research is paving the way for long-term residency in outer space and the ability to grow plants and in turn generate clean, breathable air in a space station.
Anthony, welcome to the show. I am so impressed just hearing your introduction. I barely know where to begin. You've obviously had an incredible career. What would you say, if you could pinpoint the most valuable element of research that you did in your time working with NASA, what would it be?
I think the understanding of plants, first of all, growing them in space, we're not going to use plants that we have on Earth. We're going to have to design our own. And then from that, we've actually learned that back on Earth, we probably need to change things as well if we want to deal with things like global warming and production of fertilizer. So if you step back and look at plant species, there's a massive library of possibilities. And as humans, if we want to stay on this planet, we're going to have to start changing some of that, but to do it in a mature and educated way.
And what can we do, like normal human beings living on Earth, when, you know, in terms of what you're doing in space and what's going on there, what can we actually do?
Well, from a planetary point, we have to change. Okay, so we have to either reabsorb more carbon dioxide. Therefore, we can do that. We can grow plants that have 10 times more ability to take up carbon dioxide, make a biofuel, and start using that rather than digging stuff out of the ground. So we need to be brave enough to come along and say we have to change. There's no point in carrying on the way we have.
Anthony, so plants in space. Plants on a planet. There's been a lot of talk recently on various TV programs about setting up space stations, as I've heard all my life. You know, Mars, the Moon. Is it a whole different thing to grow plants on a space station and then grow plants on a planet, or is it the same science?
Two different things. First of all, if you are on a different planet like Mars, do not, and I'll repeat, do not grow anything on that soil because you're going to die.
Okay. Now, in The Martian, he grows potatoes. Now, I have to add into this that I've seen an edition of Doctor Who called The Waters of Mars, and everything went really badly when they started using the water from Mars. Up until they had the Earth water. Once they tapped into the water of Mars, things went downhill very badly. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense. So as gross as it may sound, it would be much better to go and unfortunately use everything that you excrete, that you know where it came from. It may be gross, it may be pee and whatever else, but it's a lot safer to use that water, for example, than taking water out of Mars, where there could be viruses or things that we don't even know. And they're the last things we need to put into our body, and then to find out afterwards, oops, we shouldn't have done that.
We have an ability as humans, though, Anthony, not to be able to grow anything or do things horticulturally without producing some amount of waste. And I say as humans, there's always a byproduct and there's always something kind of left behind until we figure out what to do with that. So I mean, in its shortest In the short term, you've got obviously a large amount of green waste. So in order to start growing, we now need green waste and compost heaps either on Mars or on some other alternate planet. Mm. How does that all work? I mean, when you're doing that in a space station or on space, do you have to take that home with you and bring it back down to planet Earth? Is it treated with in a different way? How does it all go?
Do you get a wheelbarrow?
Yeah.
Good question. Very good question. And what we've learned is that here on Earth, we can have our breakfast, our lunch, our dinner, and then excrete it. And we don't really need to see any of that again for at least another 2 years because we have a big environment. In space, we need to actually recycle all of that normally within 24, 48 hours. So then everything has to be ramped up much faster so that you can go and have your breakfast, lunch, and dinner 2 days later. And so that's one of the big things we've learned is that plants, Earth evolved plants, are brilliant on Earth. They're really not very good in space. But what we've learned from it is that, you know, things like leaves, the things that leaves do, the things that the roots do, can actually be reconstructed. So we're making new plants that are half plant, half machine, that do things very, very quickly.
Sorry,
very
that
well.
Sounds a bit worrying now to me. What do you mean half plant, half machine? That's like some sort of Arthur C. Clarke book.
Well, that's the reality. If we want to go and actually live in space, there's no point in having a big, you know, beautiful rose, for example, that takes up so much space. You know, nobody needs a flower in space. You don't need stems. You need a leaf that takes up your carbon dioxide.
Genetically modified?
Yes, partially. So therefore, these systems are designed for space. They are not meant to come back to Earth. In space, there is no ecosystem to mess up with, okay? And you're living in a tin can, which actually doesn't even have an ecosystem. So these are the things we are designing for space, and the idea is it stays there. This is not stuff you bring back to Earth for obvious reasons.
I have a question, Sheila. I don't know. I know this is Sheila's mind a bit recently, but the whole NASA background about plants that went into a program to purify the air, okay, in the space stations, I'd like a little bit about that. And then how that whole thing works. So plants have a multifunctional, if my understanding is correct, in the operation space. They clean the air and they work as a plant as well?
Well, they can. But again, if you are spending more energy and more time in doing that because the plants are big and awkward, then it's not worth it. You might as well just bring on a filter that does it, okay? But if you are reconstructing plants that are very efficient, then it does work. So interesting point. Back in the Victorian times, for example, people had problems when they were burning gas or coke gas in their homes. It released a compound called ethylene, which caused a real problem for most plants, except for one or two that were, say, Aspergillus, a good example. And so now, whenever you're looking at upstairs, downstairs kind of movies, the only plant you see there is this, what they call the copper plant, okay? And here is one plant that can survive those conditions. We have the same thing in space. We have so many people floating around in a tiny area. They're doing all these interesting experiments, releasing gases. Most plant species cannot cope with that.
But hang on, Aspergillus can. It can clean the air.
It does, correct.
You
yeah,
like this, that.
Yeah, yeah, no, because I was on to Eugene only a few weeks ago about the very same thing, where I'm not loving doing housework, but obviously, like most people, it has to be done. And then I heard so many reports about all the chemicals in your household products, from your furniture polish to your bleach, whatever it is, and, you know, the damage it's doing to your own environment and where you're living, and that plants can actually suck up all the nasty and get rid of it for you. That's what I was on to Eugene about. I found it really, really interesting.
Oh, absolutely. So that's, again, stuff that we've learned in space is you put, you know, six people in a small tin can, and all of a sudden there are chemicals we never even dreamed of that are causing problems. So the same issue, your homes are now so well sealed, which is great for, you know, to keep temperatures at a certain level, but they are causing problems like formaldehyde. So green walls are, without question, a really good way of absorbing these chemicals, and it's something that people should look at.
Before we let you go, could you name maybe the top three that you would suggest that listeners could go out and buy? Would you know, or am I putting you on the spot?
Well, there are a number of, I mean, you're talking about living in a home, so it's normally going to be dark, so there's a whole lot of ferns. In fact, a broad range of ferns do very good jobs in both cleaning the air and actually living in an enclosed environment.
Right, well, I'll tell you what, one final question before we go. Is it possible to grow plants in space, and is it possible to grow plants on a moon base? Is it going to happen in the foreseeable future?
It is. We grow plants in space. The issue is more about doing it efficiently at a point where you can actually afford it and it makes sense. On Mars, again, we need to change plants, okay? They're going to be different than what we're using. They're certainly not going to be Earth-based. They're ones that we've altered.
Time up. Thank you very much, Anthony. That's what My Garden Cafe is about. We'd like to chat with you all day. Maybe we'll do a separate podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
So, Mary, it's that time of the week where you come in and impress us with what you made from the garden. We've had an up and down life with this. We don't want to mention the dandelion coffee too much, but then again, you've always impressed us. What have you got for us this week?
Well, I have a very impressive fennel and wild orange tea. So all you do is 1 teaspoon of fennel seeds that you've collected in
the garden. Okay, now hang on. So I get my fennel seeds. When am I going to do that? In the autumn?
Autumn, collect them, yeah.
All right.
When they go over, okay. So you just take them all off. Or you just hang the seed heads upside down, all right, flower heads upside down, and then just paper bag underneath and collect your seeds, okay? Bring them inside. So you're going to put 1 teaspoon of your fennel seeds in your cup, followed by boiling water. Leave for about 2 minutes and then strain, and then just add 1 drop of wild orange. It's like a little oil, just 1 drop.
Where do I find my wild orange?
Well, you can get it in aromatherapy places. But
what's the difference between a wild orange and an ordinary orange? Is
well,
it
this
a badly
is far,
behaved orange?
Far superior, far superior. Right. It's a pure oil, it's not mixed or anything else, so it just gives you that little hit. But fennel is very good anyway for an upset tummy. So if you've eaten far too much, you've had a very big dinner.
That's me.
Fennel tea. But with the wild orange in it, just... Oh,
and you have to be careful, don't you, Mary, that, you know, you get the right quality oil, because some of them are they say they're essential oils, but they're such a mix.
Well, these
and then
ones,
it might not be good to consume.
This particular brand you can use on baby skin. So if you can use it on a baby, then it's...
Yeah.
And we can ingest
can
it as well.
Yeah. So we're not actually going to put it in the tea this week because you're afraid of what I'll say. Is that it?
No. I'm putting it in the tea. You don't have to have any if you don't
want to.
Do
you want to mention the brand?
doTERRA, actually, that one is...
That's
really
nice. What do you think,
lovely?
Very nice. We could use it in space.
Oh, excellent.
Oh, well, that's
excellent.
Improved the smell.
You can bring that one and then
would
I could say
definitely improve the smell up there.
It is very smelly in space, is that right?
It's a wee bit smelly.
I like that.
Okay. I made this one last year. This other one, rhubarb and wild orange jam.
Anything with rhubarb I love, so come on.
Lovely,
rhubarb
lovely. But you have to force wild orange. Again, the little drop of wild orange oil.
Okay, so into my what, rhubarb?
Into your rhubarb. So all you're going to do is get maybe 1.3 kilos of rhubarb, forced rhubarb because it's sweeter. So it's the earliest rhubarb that you can have.
I could really see you growing rhubarb, Sheila.
Beautiful.
I used to love, like, we have a garden at home, and one year I must have been about 8, and I made Mom and Dad buy rhubarb, and it just takes over. That's the
it
only
does,
thing.
Yeah, it does
it really
over.
Does take over, yeah. But it was like rhubarb jam and rhubarb crumble and rhubarb with everything.
Okay,
really?
He was a rhubarb kind of growing person.
Okay,
very
that's
good for your
kind of strange.
Did you say you had a garden and you made Mom and Dad buy it?
Oh yeah, I had a garden. It was all mine. No, we had a garden at home, and like obviously, Dad had grown everything from spuds to, you know, peas to whatever was in the garden. And anyway, one year I loved rhubarb, so I got them to buy rhubarb and grow it in the garden. It just took over.
Wow!
But it was gorgeous. Mom was making lovely rhubarb crumbles and jams and everything.
It has to be early rhubarb though, because then it gets acidy.
Well, early in the morning.
Early in the year. So the first rhubarb, it's pinker, it's fresher, it's absolutely.
Then you have to be careful with the leaves, don't you? They're poisonous.
Yes, there's an acid in them. Yeah,
yeah. So for kids
but
animals.
You're not going to be.
People wouldn't eat rhubarb. No, right, Peter, up to Victorian times because they were scared because it would poison them.
Didn't know what to do. They probably ate the.
But then that goes back to the turnip, which was only ever used for animal fodder, and then.
Are they scared of turnips as well?
Well, we never really ate them. We did in Ireland, we didn't abroad.
So you wouldn't want to eat it if you're suffering from gout.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. A rich peasant from pre-famine
absolutely.
Days.
Absolutely. That is gout. How the richest peasants succumbed.
The only Irish peasant to have too much red wine and steak. Good, congratulations. The rest of us died from the famine, but yeah, not
teach
you.
Them.
Oh,
don't eat the spuds.
And Mary, will you put this week's recipe, is that what we're going to call
recipes?
It?
I will.
Recipe, yep. Up on our Pinterest page?
I will. You can, of course, if you have some red roses that haven't been sprayed or anything, just tear them up and put them into the rhubarb jam as well. Just gives a nice, pretty.
What? Do what with roses? What?
Rose petals.
Rose petals. Any rose petals? Hang on,
no,
I go out to the garden.
Red rose petals.
You need to be specific because I think we're running out of time.
Very
this one
nice
quick.
Red rose petals.
Coloured red, look red.
No, pure red rose petals. Tear them up and put them into the jam as well, and just gives a nice look inside the jar.
And why is it going red? It's embarrassed it's late in the season or what?
No, it's just to win the competition, the horticultural competition.
All right, fair enough.
And there we leave it.
Okay, I like that one, Mary, and it smells fantastic.
Mm.
Okay, now we come to the time of the week when Sister Mary hears confessions, and this week's gardening confession is pretty interesting. But before we do that, Sheila, would you just list off for us what we deem in Garden Cafe to be garden crimes?
Okay, number one in your garden crimes, use of fake grass or plastic hedges.
Outrageous.
Ooh.
Number two, possession of plastic plants in hanging baskets.
Oh, that just makes me ill.
Number three, existence of tarmac in the back garden.
I've seen it down the country. People who want to actually drive around the back of their house and stop and get out, go into their house and continue on driving. It's just outrageous.
Ouch. Number four, evidence of destroyed trees.
Destroyed trees. I think the worst I saw was a gentleman who didn't want to pay for the stump grinder to come in to take the crown of it out, so he dug a wee little pit in it and tried to set a fire in it.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh,
number five, dear. Possession of chemical pesticides and our weed killer.
Yeah, definitely. Mm.
Number six, evidence of lawn trauma.
Yeah, that's basically when you walk into a lawn, right? Peter will know this one, and you look at it and you brought an expert in, you know, an agronomist who's a ground expert, and he says the lawn's got lawn trauma. It's been beaten badly, it's been handled badly, it just isn't looking good. The technical phrase is lawn trauma. You
garden
haven't looked
abuse.
After your lawn, right?
People used to play the Bee Gees music over and over again and just go, yeah, take that, yeah. And more take that as well. Play take that as well while you're at it.
Number seven, possession of slug pellets.
Now, I would go to a job, and when I'm on it, I would go to the shed and confiscate all slug pellets. They kill the birds, they kill nature, they kill everything that comes into the garden, including the slugs. It's a big no-no for me. I mean, I literally will not allow them in a garden I'm in. Sometimes it's the slug pellets ahead of me, though, I have to say.
What did they choose?
Sometimes not me.
Okay, the last one on the list you have is no plant life.
Yeah, concrete.
Sad.
Garden misdemeanors and minor offences. Do you want to go through those before we get to our confession?
Aren't you missing one? You're missing one.
What is that?
Fake topiary.
Oh, well done. Well done, you.
Very good. Okay,
there is plenty of
number nine.
Okay, number nine.
And the misdemeanors and minor offences, Sheila?
Use of lawn chemicals. Yeah. Use of plastic sheeting to control weeds. Aiding and abetting the use of invasive non-native plant species.
Very good. So that's the offence. And so here it is. The Garden Cafe jury, pay attention. Sister Mary heard yet another garden crime confession.
Good morning, Sister Mary. I would like to make a confession reluctantly because I was caught in the act of laying numerous amounts of slug pellets over the last number of years. Having been cajoled into using more organic type materials, like that included sheep's wool, and then I used coffee. I then also used to go out with a bucket, and then I began to realise that my life was far too short for stuff like this. So one May, I think it was about 2 years ago, having just bought a shrub peony rose, and I went out to discover that it was beginning to be eaten alive. So I very quickly drove in my car and picked up two big, huge containers of slug pellets. And I sprayed them everywhere I could see, everywhere over the front garden and the back garden. I also went out with a plastic bucket, but I was very good in that I picked up any snail I could find. I didn't crush them, but I did place them in a brown bin as opposed to a black bin where they could be mashed to bits by the next pickup. And I refused to be remorseful for it because I spent a considerable amount of time and money trying to keep my garden looking somewhat appealing and colourful, particularly through the months of May to September. I know you can buy a light that attaches to a hat that you can wear so that you can be seen in the dark, but I feel I have no other alternative. I was also given this garlic powder stuff, which was also rubbish. So hopefully, Sister Mary, all will be forgiven and I can continue to garden without feeling guilty.
Gee, Sister Mary, that's about as bad as it gets in a garden confession.
It's quite appalling, actually. It's the amount of slug pellets that she's thrown around the place, considering, you know, most people use a few. She's using buckets of the stuff. I think alternatively, you could look at maybe introducing a few more native trees and shrubs to attract more birds in. You were saying something earlier about nettles.
Nettles actually produce a number of phenolic compounds.
What compounds?
Compounds.
Come on,
stuff.
Explain
stuff
to the listener.
Stuff that plants make to stop being eaten. And sometimes you can actually take the leaves, put them into hot water, spin them around for a while, and actually with a watering can, spread it around, and you can avoid aphids, certain slugs.
And is it to do with the smell? Is that to do with the smell?
Well,
of
the compounds in it that actually repel, or natural repellents. Yeah. So there's a whole realm of plants.
So we really don't need to be using...
Not a program.
Yeah.
Peter, because I am I the only one here that kind of feels for her? She was trying to do the right thing. She was trying to
cost the
ground.
A lot of this goes back, though, to the basics, and the basics in the most eloquent way of saying, as all good horticulturists or gardeners will tell you, is you start at the start, and the start is garden, what is known as garden hygiene. So if you have a clean, proper, well-maintained, well-looked-after, nicely planted, properly well-thought-out garden, then you shouldn't really have. Like, I've never personally used slug pellets in my own garden, but that's because it's extremely
hang
well
on, Peter, because the garden is so nice, they won't visit your garden because they admire it and go, well, I'm not
no,
going
no,
there.
No, the basis...
wouldn't dare. Wouldn't
so
dare.
If you go back to the olden days where everything was planted taller to the back, it was darkest, it was all of the old, the conifers and that, starting at the tallest, and then you graduated downwards towards the smaller at the front. There was very little air movement between one plant and another. However, in modern day planning, which I believe her garden is of that, and it's also a front garden that she was referring to on this occasion. If you actually look at the planting, it should be planted in triangulation or in triplicate so that you have wind movement and air movement through. And you have to understand also where slugs and snails and mollusks like to sleep and hide, and that is in beds of decomposing material.
Are you basically saying she's a dirty garden?
In short, yes.
Hang on, I'm just going to say relocation program here, guys. Go with a bucket, get out at night with your flashlight, your bucket, and a pair of gloves.
Put them in the bucket. Stop.
That's what it's all about.
Nighttime is for sleeping.
Yeah. Well, if you're a gardener, maybe, you know, Sheila, so I'm going to have to work on that bit in terms of gardening.
You could also feed them beer. Slugs
yes,
love
like beer. Yeah.
So they can all go have a drip of a sip of beer at night time, and then Eugene will come over and actually pick them up.
I think that we need to get the jury. We have five people. We should get a majority vote. I can't forgive, especially when she went and tried to reform herself. So we'll start with Peter. Guilty or not guilty, Peter?
For differing reasons to what you're all about to come up with, but nonetheless guilty, yeah.
Guilty, yeah. Mary?
Totally guilty.
Two guilties. Sheila?
Oh, I got to be the one out here.
Yeah,
I feel compassion for her.
Good.
So not guilty.
This is democracy, jury. Not guilty.
Actually, I have to say not guilty because she has a garden and that's got to stand for a lot.
Thank you.
So this is like one of those X Factor moments when they say
the split, you're going to do the decides.
It's down to you, Eugene.
And
two guilty, two not guilty.
It's quite
What's
obvious
it
where I'm going with this. I'm afraid that our friend Sinead across the road, her codename is in my book guilty.
Ah. Yes. Darn it.
Yes.
Not good. Now, what we can suggest at this point is listeners can email us during the week and give us what they think is an acceptable sentence, and we will hand it down next week.
Okay, moving on to listeners' questions. All right, first up we have, when should I prune a magnolia tree? From Jerry in West Cork. Mary.
You shouldn't have to. If you've grown it in the right location, you've given it enough space, you shouldn't have to. But if you have to, take out any diseased or damaged wood, take it out in the middle of the summer.
Okay, Ruth in Waterford wants to know, what can I do about an area in my garden that seems to constantly flood? Anthony.
I would grow willow. And rather than letting it grow into a big tree with lots of shading, actually cut it every 2 years. That's called coppicing. And you have nice long rods that you can use in the garden for growing other plants. Or
good idea.
Edgar, who lives in Bantry, wants to know, I want to grow some tropical plants in a very sheltered site that gets a lot of sun. Can you recommend some that you may have tried? Peter, what do you think?
The old Irish version of the tropical is slightly different to what I guess reality tropical is. So, for example, the island of Madeira, one that's used quite strongly over there, is the Cordyline australis. I'd never really seen it in flower a whole lot over here, or it didn't look as good. It seems to look just maybe it's a sunnier backdrop. Cordyline and Trachycarpus, it's a long one, I don't mean to sound like that. If you are in the island of Ireland and if you want to go a little bit smaller and you don't have that much space, down to any of the Formiums or any of the Carex will give you that grass-like-y feel.
Are we comparing Madeira with West Cork?
Pardon me.
Was it West Cork, Sheila? Was
slightly
it
warmer.
East Cork, West Cork.
But I don't know what whether he lives in an apartment or a balcony or so. Maybe just wants a tropical feel somewhere. So
what about the microclimate aspect? If they've got a nice kind of warm south-facing garden, wouldn't that be? That would definitely aid him, Sheila. I think you find the warmest part of the garden.
I would have thought so. I was just going to say that.
There's a lovely hardy ginger, which would be beautiful, beautiful flowering ginger.
Right.
Nice.
Got a name for that?
Cortelea. Robusta, I think.
And you're going to find that in your ordinary garden centre?
You'll get it in Farm Lee when they're doing the plant fair.
Right. That's
exactly.
He's in Cork.
Actually, something to think about is that with global warming, Cork will have the same climate conditions as Madeira. So to be ahead of the curve, you might as well go and plant some interesting things.
Terry in Dublin wants to know, why is my lovely Acer developed orange little blisters all over one of the branches even. Mary.
Okay, it sounds like coral spot, and it's because maybe one of the branches got damaged, or he pruned it badly, or somebody else pruned it badly. So just prune out the offending branch that has the coral spot on and hope for the best. If it's over 40 years, it could be just that the tree is dying itself.
Keep trimming.
Keep trimming.
Next up, Shirley's listening to us in Wicklow. She says, I bought a blueberry bush last year and didn't get one blueberry off it. What am I doing wrong? Eugene, what do you think?
I think what you're doing wrong is a number of things. I had blueberries. The whole crop got eaten by blackbirds. But you need a specific soil. You need a peat-based soil, ericaceous soil. You need to get them in a sunny area. So treat them like you would magnolias or camellias, fairly exotic plants. Get a good sunny south-facing wall. They can take a little bit of shade, that is true. But it's all about the soil. Get the right soil. So go in and ask for the camellia, rhododendron type soil, and you should have a good crop. Add a bit of tomato food in, anything that's high in potash, including banana skins, and the crop could be better.
Let me just say, they were eaten by blackberries or blackbirds?
Blackbirds. Yes, and they raided them at 5 a.m. Sorry about that. Yes, quite right to correct me, Anthony.
Lovely. Imelda in Sligo says, my lawn has become very patchy, became even very patchy last summer and died off in places. Can you tell me why this happens or happened even? Peter, what do you think?
Oh God, there are more books on this subject than any other subject in the whole planet as far as I'm concerned. Having the ever perfect lawn is an endless feat that man will never fully achieve. However, there's a couple of things to having a good lawn, and this may explain them. Number one, she was having possibly an Irish dancing competition on that one spot in her garden. Or in layman's terms, that is compaction, or somebody hitting the same piece of ground over and over again. In short, garden fork, sand or a bit of grit or a bit of compost down through it, and put down a little bit of new seed, and that should solve most of your problems.
And this is where we leave listeners' questions and answers. Thank you very much.
And that's it for this week, folks. We just need everyone to say goodbye. Peter, say goodbye. And anything final thought you have, quickly?
Not at all. Goodbye, and thank you for listening. Cheers. Thanks.
Mary Staunton, any final words?
I hope to talk to you all next week.
Yeah, Anthony, any lots of words, I'm sure.
Until the next time, hopefully. Thank you very much.
Sheila, what do you think?
It's been a pleasure. Can't wait to go home and mow the lawn.
Yeah, excellent.
Easy there.
Sheila, I just say on behalf of everyone, thanks for joining us. And if you wanted to come back next week, this is what everyone can look forward to. We will meet the Naked Gardener. We will talk to the Lawn Whisperer, an exclusive interview. And we'll find out all about what exactly floriography is. Hands up, anyone who's ever heard of floriography?
That's a new one on me.
Yeah, it's a new, it's the language of...
Can I come back next week?
Yes, you can.
Naked Gardener,
so,
interesting.
So, Garden Cafe, all our information is on our Pinterest page, Garden Cafe Ireland. Andrew Magan produced, and Eugene Higgins says goodbye. See you next week.
All the ducks are swimming in the water. Alder, alder, alder. All the ducks are swimming in the water. Alder, alder, alder. Alder, alder, alder. All the ducks are swimming.
Recorded and produced by Castaway Media in association with Color Green.